This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Companies announced plans to build more than a dozen new coal-fired power plants, which are being fast-tracked by Governor Rick Perry. Coal plants are the primary source of mercury and radionuclides, according to the EPA. Furthermore, they pose serious health risks to our environment and public health. Join Clean, the Citizens League for Environmental Action Now, a Houston-based nonprofit organization whose purpose is to inform the public about environmental issues and take action. Clean presents a forum to address these issues that stand to affect all Texans, Tuesday, February 27, 6 p.m. at the Houston Ballroom at the University of Houston. For further information, visit Clean's website at www.cleanhouston.org or call us at 713-524-3000. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
This is Deborah Bell.
J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
We have a pretty big show tonight. Paul Scott with Equality Texas is going to be talking about the upcoming Lobby Day that happens on March 5th in Austin. And Deborah Bell talks with Katie Hemm, volunteer at KPFT, and is part of a drag king troupe called Gendervin. The work breaks down the barriers in sexual gender community to bring people together and to bring the queer community into a larger justice movement. Well, that's a mouthful. They will be performing Friday the 23rd at Club 1415, which is on 1415 California. Then we'll be talking to Mark Cohen, program manager for CAMPS International Programs and Special Events for AIDS Foundation, which with the upcoming AIDS Walk just a few weeks away. And we'll also be talking to Carol Wyatt, who is president of the board of Pride Houston, about this year's celebration. All that and this way out and wonderful segments. A few items of notice that we have to talk about this week.
Well, I was going to do that a little bit later in the show.
All right. Well, then let's go right with our first segment in News Wrap.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Don Lupo
with News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 17th, 2007. The committee of the Nigerian House of Representatives held a public hearing this week to consider one of the most draconian, homophobic measures ever proposed anywhere in the world. The legislation would imprison people for up to 5 years for being gay or lesbian, or even for associating with lesbians or gay men. It would outlaw membership in a lesbi-gay group and punish anyone who advocates for lesbi-gay civil rights, donates money to a lesbi-gay organization, hosts or visits a gay or lesbian website, distributes gay safer sex information, or rents or sells property to a same-gender couple. Expressions of homosexual love in letters or emails would also be banned. Participation in or attendance at a same-gender marriage or blessing ceremony and publishing, selling, or loaning a lesbi-gay-themed book or video would be illegal. However, over 100 petitions from human rights organizations objecting to the proposed new law were presented at the House committee hearing this week. The bill is going to seriously violate the rights of people, Eleni Ademola of the lesbi-gay rights organization Independent Project Nigeria told the BBC. This bill is evil and should not be allowed to see the light of day, he said. With elections for the presidency and the National Assembly coming in April, queer activists fear that politicians are using the popular measure to rally voters.
Nigerian society is divided between Christians and Muslims, but this issue has united them. The Christian Association of Nigeria called for speedy passage of the law, describing same-gender unions as barbaric and shameful. The National Muslim Center also condemned lesbian and gay relationships as immoral, saying they run contrary to our cultural and religious values. Homosexual sex is already illegal in Nigeria, punishable by imprisonment in the predominantly Christian South and by death in the Muslim North. The new legislation must get two-thirds majorities in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, which together constitute the National Assembly. Senan Murray, the BBC's correspondent in the capital, Abuja, has reported that Assembly insiders have told him the bill is likely to pass both chambers by the end of March. Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, whose government is sponsoring the bill, would sign it into law.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has made his first public remarks about gays and lesbians. In response to a reporter's question about Moscow Mayor Yuri Lushkov's denunciation of LGBT pride parades as satanic, Putin said that, "I respect and will respect freedom of people in all their manifestations, but I will not be drawn into statements made by leaders of the regions. My attitude to sexual minorities is simple," he added. "It is connected with my fulfilling of my official obligations." But he alluded, perhaps as a joke, to the possibility that growing acceptance of homosexuality was responsible for his country's declining birth rate. Moscow Pride organizer Nikolai Alexeyev nevertheless called Putin's remarks a great breakthrough. Because of the mere idea of gay pride, the Russian president started to talk about sexual minorities. Last year's pride ban, supported by the courts, led organizers to replace the planned parade with attempts to lay flowers at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and then to hold a rally across from City Hall. Participants in both small events were violently attacked by neo-fascists, skinheads, fundamentalist Christians, and riot police. Mayor Lushkov has already said he won't allow another pride parade this year. But organizers have vowed to march anyway, and on the same date, May 27th, the anniversary of the repeal in Russia of Soviet-era laws against consensual homosexual sex. They've also filed suit in the European Court of Human Rights over last year's ban. They seek the right to march and the equivalent of $26,000 in compensation. Alexeyev told reporters that not a single European legal expert we have spoken with doubts in the success of our application to the court.
Same-gender couples sought marriage licenses in clerks' offices from one end of the U.S. to the other on Valentine's Day, February 14th, in observance of the 10th annual Freedom to Marry Day. As in the past 9 years, they were refused in every state except Massachusetts, the only U.S. state with full marriage equality. Marriage advocates were also out in force in the three states that allow civil unions, Vermont, Connecticut, and New Jersey, demanding that their laws be upgraded to marriage. Legislation to that effect has already been proposed in Vermont and Connecticut. New Jersey's civil unions go into effect this week.
In New York State, where the top court last year ruled that granting marriage to gay and lesbian couples is up to the legislature, Democratic Governor Eliot Spitzer has pledged to introduce such a bill. Lesbi-gay couples demonstrated for equality in a number of cities across the state.
In Maryland, where the Supreme Court is expected to rule this year on a lawsuit by same-gender couples seeking the right to marry, couples rallied at the state capitol in Annapolis.
In California, the marriage issue is before both the state Supreme Court and the legislature. Assemblyman Mark Leno was among those at a rally in San Francisco commemorating the third anniversary of the short-lived licensing of lesbi-gay couples there, whose marriages were later overturned by the state Supreme Court. Leno said he also wanted to promote legislation he's reintroduced in the assembly that would establish marriage equality in the state. A similar bill was passed by the California legislature in 2005, but Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed it. Schwarzenegger said this week that he would veto such legislation again this year.
And in North Central California's Yolo County, Clerk Freddie Oakley presented lesbian and gay couples with certificates of inequality when they applied for marriage licenses. Oakley said she supports their efforts and sees no valid reason why same-gender couples should not be able to marry.
A Republican-sponsored federal marriage amendment to the U.S. Constitution to outlaw same-gender marriage has failed twice in Congress. However, the Clinton-era Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, prevents the federal government from recognizing any legally contracted union of a gay or lesbian couple. That includes marriages from Massachusetts or other countries where they're legal, or civil unions, or civil or domestic partnerships in a handful of other U.S. states and a few other countries.
A lesbian couple in Argentina was denied a marriage license on Valentine's Day, and they vowed to take their case to court. Buenos Aires became the first Latin American city to legalize same-gender unions in 2003, but Maria Rashid and Claudia Castro, a couple for 7 years and already in a civil union, want full marriage equality. "We'll go to the Supreme Court if necessary," said Rashid, who is president of the Argentine Federation of Lesbians, Gays, Bisexuals, and Transsexuals. "We want the same rights with the same names as any heterosexual couple," said Castro. She told the Reuters news agency that the Buenos Aires same-gender unions law is very limited and does not provide for shared parental rights, inheritance, or pension rights. Maria Jose Lubertino, the head of the Argentine government's National Institute Against Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Racism, said her office would support the two women in their legal battle.
More than 100 gay and lesbian couples celebrated their registrations for civil unions on Valentine's Day in Mexico City's Central Plaza, wearing suits and wedding dresses and throwing rice in what some observers called a mass engagement party. The couples noted their intent with the non-governmental Citizens Civil Union Network ahead of a law allowing gay and lesbian couples to register their relationships and gain many of the rights of married couples. Mexico City is a semi-independent capital zone with some of the same powers as state legislatures. The law was approved there in November and takes effect on March 16th. Couples have already civilly united in Mexico's northern state of Coahuila, where similar legislation was recently enacted.
And in what may have been the world's most unexpected demonstration in support of legal rights for queer couples this week, about a half dozen gay men and lesbians in Beijing used Valentine's Day to make the first public appeal for the legalization of same-gender marriage in China. They handed out flyers wrapped around red carnations during a busy lunch hour in the capital's central business district. "Love has no boundaries. It has nothing to do with gender," the flyers read. "We are homosexuals. We also want a life together with our loved one. Please support all kinds of partnerships and all kinds of love. Please support same-sex marriage." Such unauthorized protests are rare in China. "We were concerned about security," Xi'an, one of the lesbian protesters, told reporters. "Our action can be considered kind of political," she said. The demonstration lasted about 20 minutes with no intervention by authorities. Police shut down a gay lesbian cultural festival in 2005, saying that the organizers had not sought official permission to hold the event.
Brilliant sunshine and a party atmosphere drew an estimated 12,000 people to the 7th annual Big Gay Out on February 11th in Auckland, New Zealand. There were a variety of commercial stalls and lots of safer sex information, along with food and beverage, dancing and entertainment. Special guests included Prime Minister Helen Clark, opposition leader John Key, several members of Parliament, and Auckland Mayor Dick Hubbard, who officially opened the event. In a pre-festival ceremony the day before, New Zealand Conservation Minister Chris Carter and his partner of 33 years, Peter Kaiser, were presented with a cake celebrating their civil union.
But finally, the world's first openly transsexual member of a national parliament, New Zealand's Georgina Beyer, is quitting this month. She served for 7 years and always intended to leave office by the time she turns 50, which will be in November. After leaving office, Beyer will appear on stage in the Dunedin Fortune Theater's production of Six Dance Lessons in 6 Weeks. But she's also considering a run for mayor of Wellington in the next election.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 17th, 2007. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Don Lupo.
And I'm Rick Watts.
Woof.
Some folks never seen a bear at all. Some folks say that bears go around eating babies raw. Some folks got a bear across the hall. Some folks say that bears go around smelling bad. Well, others say that a bear is a honey sweet. Some folks say this bear's the best I ever had. Some folks got a bear beneath their feet. Some folks drive the bears out of the wilderness. Some see a bear would be fate. Me, I just bear up to my bewildered best. Some folks even see the bear in. Me, I just bear up to my bewildered best. Some folks even see the bear in me. So meet him there and take him on out to lunch with you. Well, even though your friends may stop and stare, don't
Just remember there's a bear there in the bunch with you. And it just don't come no better ever. Meet them there and stick your mind out to lunch with you. Well, even though your friends may stop and stare, just remember there's a bear there in the bunch with you. And it just don't come no better than a bear. Just don't come no better than a bear. They just don't come no better. They just don't come no better. They just don't come no better than a bear.
And this is JD, and that was Mark Weigel with a song called Bears. And what a coincidence. That gives me a good chance to plug my Queer Music Heritage show for next week. Second hour next week, it'll be on bear music, music of bear artists for the bear community. A whole hour of that, and there's much more on my website at www.queermusicheritage.com.
This is Queer Voices.
With us on the line is Paul Scott, who is Executive Director of Equality Texas, and he's going to be talking about what's going on up in Austin and the upcoming Lobby Day. It's the Lobby Day. GLBT.
And whatever else you
want. Whatever else, right, right. So, and I got on late on the conference call, so I'm not quite caught up with everything that's going on. I know you're all busy up there trying to stop things from happening, I guess probably more so than being proactive because of what, you know, because of the way the legislature's made up. So what's going on, Paul?
Well, yes, we will be having our first, not our first, but we will be having our lobby day on Monday, March the 5th, and that will be a combined lobby day for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and our allied folks as well. We're real fortunate this year to have a lot of different organizations across the state to partner with us on our lobby day as we reach out and try to strengthen our coalition, not only among the gay and lesbian and transgender organizations, but also among our allied organizations as well and our national organizations. And we're really going to be focusing on this year on several things. First of all, we know that for the fifth session in a row that there is going to be efforts to try to restrict gays and lesbians from being foster parents and or adoptive parents in this session. And we saw the opening salvo of this issue a couple of weeks ago when Warren Chisholm came out and said that he wanted a preference system for straight people to be foster parents over gay and lesbian parents. And we saw that in an article in the Austin American Statesman and responded immediately by meeting with him the next day to talk about these issues and came out with a press release saying that we totally disagree with what he thinks is the right thing to do. We think that, and we know that science has shown that gays and lesbians, you know, make just as good as parents as anyone else, no better, no worse, but every study shows that they make great parents. And even in his own words, he had said after the marriage amendment in 2005, he said, you know, the gays and lesbians do a fabulous job stepping in when no one else will when it comes to foster parenting.
Right. So it's like we're sort of like separate but not equal.
Right, and he just believes, you know, that's a strong belief system that every child needs a man and woman and married man and woman to be their parents, and the foster kids need to have that. And unfortunately, that doesn't exist in our world and really never has for the most part. Kids need to have a safe home. They need to have a home with resources. They need to have a home where they're going to feel like they have love and caring and support. And we believe that those qualities should be the ones that should be the main factor when placing these kids that are coming from very difficult situations sometimes. Those are the main factors that need to be considered, not whether or not someone's gay or straight.
Right.
That's so secondary to the issue of bringing up a kid and making sure that they have a stable environment in which to feel safe in.
And Paul, that totally discounts other situations where there's a divorce or a death of a parent or a death of two parents where children sometimes are raised by grandparents. So, it's like you're applying a standard to the foster care system that's not applied to everyone else.
Exactly, and it does affect the placement of the kids. When we look at the foster care system, a third of the kids, and a little bit more than a third, are coming from married male and females households. That's where they're coming from initially, and there are some kids, obviously, that once they get to a certain age, they get to decide, particularly in adoption issues, they get to decide where they want to go. So there's a family in San Antonio that was on Oprah a couple of weeks ago, and the gay couple in San Antonio had fostered over 21 kids, and one of those kids was older, and he wanted to be with them as parents, and it was his choice to choose those two men to be his parents because that's the first home he felt safe in and felt like he was really loved.
You know, it seems like we deal with this issue every session, and they just don't seem to understand or want to understand. Or is this just something that some of these representatives are just doing so that they think they can get reelected by the conservative voters?
Well, Jack, I think some, there are different reasons for why this is happening. I think sometimes definitely we see it as a political agenda. We see it as a wedge issue. We see it as people wanting to use the gay and lesbians once again to cause divisiveness in our politics. And I think some of it does have to do with districts in the sense of feeling like I need to cater to my district where I have a much more conservative voter base. And that's where Equality Texas steps in and tries to, long term, we need to educate people not only in our metropolitan areas, obviously, but also in these rural districts. But when we look at polling on this issue, when it's specifically when we see it on issues that were, that y'all mentioned earlier in the sense of the death of a parent and placement with a gay or lesbian uncle or aunt and those circumstances, we see that most people do not object to the polls, or the majority of people don't see a problem with it, and particularly in communities of color, actually, we see even stronger support for placement with gay and lesbian families.
So Lobby Day is one of the things that we can go up there and talk to some of these representatives, I guess, and show that we're from other places than just the urban areas.
Oh, exactly. It's a perfect opportunity just to have a conversation with not only your legislator, but also legislators that are working on these issues. And one thing I do have to say, being in this job for almost a year now and having conversations with a representative, even with some of the ones that are the architects of gay and lesbian discrimination, I mean, you can at least sit down and have a conversation and agree to disagree at times, which sometimes is a little bit disconcerting. Sometimes I feel like I'd rather yell at someone and than have them kind of be agreeable as I'm talking to them and then do their dirty deeds after I leave the room.
Well, but it's great that you can sit down and at least have a conversation and, discuss your differences.
Exactly. And until we do that, and until we as a community really take ownership of this and realize that we can sit down and have a conversation about this and have multiple conversations and having that erosion of these myths and stereotypes that are being perpetuated, it's very difficult after someone in the Houston area or in the greater Houston area sits down, or someone from Midland, Odessa sits down with their legislator and talks about their lives and their families and their workplace and their schools. And after having those conversations, it's very difficult all of a sudden to kind of resurrect that myth and stereotype and the portraits have been portrayed of gays and lesbians as these perverts, or however it's been portrayed.
Well, and the other interesting thing is a lot of people who live in Houston now came from other parts of Texas, who have family members still back there, so that they could have the opportunity of talking to some of the representatives that are in the districts that they grew up in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's great that we can have conversations about our lives, whether we have kids, or whether we've got issues in the workplace, whether it's positive stuff or negative stuff. But really, we need to expand this conversation to our family members and to our friends and to our straight allies that know us and know who we are and know what kind of people we are, to have these conversations themselves. And that's why we're partnering with some of our progressive organizations, such as the Texas Freedom Network and People for the American Way, but also a great new organization called Atticus Circle, which came out during the marriage campaign and was founded, which is just a group of people around the country, and particularly in Texas, that just feel like this is wrong. They may not have a gay or lesbian relative or a transgender relative, but they just think this is wrong that we're discriminating. It's just not right to deny people their civil and human rights.
So tell us about Lobby Day. How does it all work? Can you come in on, do you come in on Sunday? Do you come in on Monday? Do we all meet at one place? Do we have a script?
This is the Deborah Bell along with Jack Belinsky, and we're talking to Paul Scott of Equality Texas. And Paul, this is the first Lobby Day in quite some time where we're not having a rally or march.
Yes, it is. There are a couple of reasons why we're not having a rally. First of all, just logistically, it was going to be problematic this year, particularly since half the staff is new at Equality Texas, and we were really wanting to make sure that we focused on the actual lobbying event.
And that certainly makes sense.
And yes, also, and South by Southwest takes place in Austin, usually around the same time as we are having one of our lobby days.
Yeah, just gearing up as our stuff begins, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt like we wanted to have something. We're going to have a reception on Sunday, the night before, at the Wyndham Garden Hotel at Woodward Avenue in Austin. It's off of I-35. And we'll have that reception from 5 to 7 p.m. on Sunday. And just to kind of give you some ideas, I mean, Lobby Days, we make it very easy for you. We're going to provide you everything. Lobby Day does start very early in the morning on Monday morning, March the 5th. We will meet at the Capitol Extension Auditorium, room E1004, at 8 o'clock to do our registration, and then we'll do a press conference on the South Steps at 9 o'clock and a photo opportunity at 9:30. And then we start our Lobby Day training at 10 o'clock in the Capitol in the same room where we registered. And you can get all this information online at www.equalitytexas.org. That is where we've, the front page is all the information about our Lobby Day. We need for everybody to register online so that we can match you up in teams and let you know who your representatives are so that you can be educated about who you're going to be meeting with. But we'll provide all those talking points. They're going to be online as well, but we can also provide them the day of our Lobby Day. They're very short and simple, and there's not a lot of time necessarily to spend with our legislators. But we can come to them with some clear, concise talking points, and they can walk away with, as you deliver in your lobby team, you'll be delivering a packet of information to those legislative offices.
And the best way to get information?
Best way to get information is to go to equalitytexas.org. Please register online. You can control how much information you get from us. If you don't want to get a lot of emails, you can just check that. You know, there's a way to do that. But we really want everybody to come out because there's only once every 2 years we get this opportunity to speak directly in an organized fashion with our legislators and senators. So we really need to get people out there to spend one day out of 2 years to fight for our equality and let them know who we are.
Absolutely.
And for those folks that may not be online, phone number?
Phone number is going to be 512 area code 474-5475. And Bryn Gorman is the contact. She is our field associate. She's the one that's helping to organize all this. So, again, it's 512-474-5475.
Now, tell me what else besides the foster care issues are on the table this time. 4 years ago, that was a big issue, foster care and adoption. 2 years ago, it was the marriage amendment. And so what is the legislative agenda for Equality Texas other than the foster care?
Outside of the defensive foster care position, we're looking at advancing our work on workplace non-discrimination. There are several bills out there, one by Jessica Farrar out of the Houston area, that will add sexual orientation and gender identity and expression into non-discrimination policies and protections in the state of Texas. There's another bill by Representative Bill Real out of San Antonio, which is a larger bill which covers non-discrimination in workplace, employment, public accommodations, real estate, and housing. And that, again, includes sexual orientation and gender identity and expression. There's other bills dealing with insurance non-discrimination, school non-discrimination. We're looking at both including that in public education policies, both for employees and for students, as well as looking about how to get a study on bullying and harassment in the schools so that we get some good quantitative data to show what the incidence rates are, not only for, you know, LGBT bullying and harassment, but all bullying and harassment. So it's a little bit broader issue, particularly since we know that a lot of people in schools are sometimes, you know, picked on not only not because they're gay necessarily, but because of how they appear or that they have a perception of being gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. So some of the, those are some of our key issues.
And
we
doesn't
also know that
Garnett Coleman have one adding sexual expression or gender identity to the hate crimes bill?
Yeah, I was just about to say that he just introduced a bill that will add sexual orientation, gender identity and expression to the James Byrd Jr. Hate Crime Act. And so we're going to be working with his office to see how we can advance that. Our concern, of course, obviously, is after a 10-year fight with getting what is, I guess, how it's termed now, sexual preference in the Hate Crimes Act, we want to be careful about how we go forward so that we don't give an opportunity for some of the representatives or senators to try to remove that language at the same time that we're trying to add language. One thing we always want to be careful about, and, you know, representatives like Coleman and Senator Ellis and the Houston contingent is really savvy at this. They know that if they see something coming down the pike and working with us, they could pull it off the floor and pull it out from consideration. So that's one thing we want to be very careful about is making sure we don't lose ground while we're trying to gain ground at the same time, which is one reason why we're real excited about including the transgender community into our lobby day this year rather than having them organize a separate one. We really wanted, as a statewide organization, to reach out to the transgender community and be inclusive in the work that we're doing from now on, and it's really important that we do that. And we've got a commitment that we're not going forward on these legislative pieces unless it includes gender identity and expression in the future.
Well, great. Thanks for keeping us up to date.
Is there anything that you want to tell us that we may not have asked you about?
I think, you know, the main thing is that we on our website, we have our legislative tracking. I didn't get a chance to go into detail because we're tracking so many different bills right now. But you can go online. If you can go online, go to Equality Texas, and you can see that there's a box called Ledge Watch, which you can click on that, and you can see what we're doing. I would encourage people to get educated about what we're doing because we're going to be asking people as we get into the hearings, particularly in March into April, we're going to be asking people to call their representatives and their senators, to email them, to send letters, and to really kind of get behind some of the work that we're doing, because we need people to do that, because we're just six people out there and two people up at the Capitol mostly. We need to have everyone in the community and their supporters really respond to our action alerts and sign up online to get that information.
Let me ask you about something else, Paul. How does Equality Texas exist?
Because
we're one of the few states in the country that have a lobbying or legislative branch for the GLBT community.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, you know, that this takes a lot of work, and that, you know, many states across the country, the LGBT organizations that are statewide advocacy organizations depend solely upon individual donations for the most part. 85% of our funding, we have close to a $600,000 budget. 85% of that is coming from individual donations, and all of our work stays here in Texas. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, how important statewide advocacy and lobbying work is. We've seen it now with the marriage amendments and about how important these issues are at the state level, because that's happening. We're seeing it at the state level, state by state, whether it's negative issues happening or whether it's positive work that's happening. And that's where, as the second largest state in the country, we really need to improve our ability to do this type of work and to respond, because we're so large geographically and, you know, and through population. And we really need financial support to make this happen. It doesn't happen in a vacuum.
And so do you accept memberships?
We accept memberships, and again, you can go online and you can become a member of Equality Texas. Our base membership is around $35, and then you can make donations on top of that. And there's a contribution section to our website that's easily accessed. We really ask people to consider how much it's worth. We calculated that today. And, you know, most estimates show at least 600,000 LGBT Texans. And we're spending probably a little bit less than a dollar per LGBT Texan right now with our budget trying to get equality for everyone. And that budget is, you know, is doable, and we can do a lot of work with that budget. But we really need to get people to help us, you know, make that happen, because I think everyone, every lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender person in this Texas, in the state of Texas, is worth at least $1. So we all need to contribute to make that happen.
Or maybe $3, a $3 bill. Okay.
$3 bill, you're right.
My poor attempt at a joke. Okay, Paul, well, I'll be seeing you on March the 5th in Austin. And I think Jennifer Renee is planning on being there. So we'll make sure we say hi to you.
Yeah, we got a great group from Houston, and our the caucus and the Houston GLBT Political Caucus and HERA, the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, are all partnership program. So I really appreciate the work that the Houston folks are doing to help us out.
Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
Oh yeah, y'all take care.
Begging and pleading for the kisses you're missing, loving your need. Your absence played a trick or two on this old heart of mine. I'll settle for a lover of another kind. Have you met lonely, my new one and only? As long as lonely's no name, there's no one to wait up for. Lonely never cheated on me, left me wanting more. While you were away, came to me one day, lonely's here to stay. To my senses, unravel my heartstrings, let down my defenses. It's true that when you met me, I sang a sweeter song, but I've changed my tune. Next one who comes along. Have you met lonely, my new one and only? As long as lonely's known me, there's been no one to wait up for. Lonely never cheated on me, me wanting more. While you were away, came to me one day, the lonely's here to stay. Never cheated on me.
here to stay.
This is J.D., and I'm pleased to bring you a local Houston artist. Mike Ator is his name, A-T-O-R. He doesn't have a CD yet, but he's working on it.
This is Queer Voices.
And now, as they say on Monty Python, now something completely different. This is Deborah Bell, and I'm talking with Katie Heim. She's been a volunteer for KPFT for a while, and she's part of a drag king troupe called the Gender Men. Now, first of all, tell me what a drag king is.
Well, a drag king is like similar to a drag queen in that it's people performing outside of their own gender or as a different gender than, you know, they usually identify. But it's not limited to that. There are also bio queens and different types of gender performers, you know. So, it's basically anybody who wants to think outside of the gender box. And it's not limited.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just a woman dressing up as a man and doing a show. Is it lip syncing?
Lip syncing.
Do they perform to?
Most drag kings perform by lip syncing, but there are people who do sing their own songs. Mm-hmm. You know, so and I think that it's not just, you know, what you normally think of about, you know, somebody getting up there and singing a song. It's more putting on a show. You know, people who do drag, and especially the direction that our troupe has gone in, it's been a very, like, deliberate choice to entertain on many different levels, you know, so intellectually and also, you know, in traditional thinking of just singing a song.
Mm-hmm. And are any of the women do impersonations of male, like in the drag queen community, they often, someone will perform as Reba McEntire or Diana Ross or somebody like that. Is there a comparable?
Well, there are kings who perform that way. None of the people in our troupe really do impersonations or have not, you know, sought that direction. Our pieces are a little more, I don't know, do some of you guys want to talk about it, too?
And also with us is Asoph, Casey, and Jessica. So you can say your name when you start speaking so they'll know which one is talking.
Hey, Deborah. Thanks for having us on. This is Jessica, and I want to say that Katie does a really mean Johnny Cash.
Oh, yeah.
She's not a Johnny Cash impersonator per se, but she could be.
Do it. Do the voice.
Hello. Hello. I'm Johnny Cash.
And I performed as Elton John before.
That's true.
And I think I make a pretty mean Elton John, but I don't have a ticket to Vegas yet.
Don't see us, like, you know, there's female impersonators, and you think of, like, you know, somebody getting up and doing Liza Minnelli or, you know, something like that. And I just haven't seen any kings do
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been involved? And what drew you to even do this kind of work? Any of you? Don't all speak at once.
This is Asoph, and I've been kind of involved for maybe 6 months to a year, and the reason I became involved is because I'm a firm believer in thinking outside of, the lines, like, of gender, and it makes sense to me, and I want to put myself in the community, in a community that feels the same way I do, and that everything isn't as black and white as we're told it is.
Mm-hmm. The constraints of
gender,
the whole idea that it's either or,
right,
male, female,
right,
the dichotomy of one or the other.
I've always been interested in people, you know, in day-to-day life and, you know, in the media who are able to embody both. I'm just drawn to them, and so it just makes sense for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you, any of you, have a performing background otherwise? I mean, that's kind of something to say. I'm going to, you know, go appear on a stage, be out in front of people, and I'm going
to
do it.
It was my very first time to do anything, really. I mean, besides, like, a school play or something like that, the first time that I got on stage with Jessica and we did Hair, like, over a year ago at Club Eve. And, you know, I just got up there, and it was really, really scary, but you realize once you're up there that the lights are so bright that you can't tell if anybody's looking at you anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
You just have a good time with it.
Absolutely. It's really, really fun. I love being on stage.
Now, Katie, you told me that it's more than just the performance, that there's work involved with about sexuality, gender, community. Explain a little bit about that.
Well, our performances have really sought to bring what would traditionally be considered as the queer community or people, you know, like, it's been traditionally kind of lesbian up to this point, but we're trying to bring that community into the larger social justice movement by performing pieces that are at their heart very political, very thought-provoking, very pushing the limits of gender expression, and you know, not just a woman performing as a man, but sometimes it's a woman performing as a man, performing as a woman, performing as a man. And the gender lines...
It's the Victoria thing.
Exactly. And the gender lines get so blurred that you're attracted to this person and you have no idea what's between their legs. And it doesn't matter, because it's about that person and that space that's been created. And I really love how we get to challenge even people who maybe consider themselves open, you know, even the queer community, who, you know, they consider it's okay to love another man, it's okay to love another woman. Is it okay to love a man who looks like a woman, who is looking like a man? You know, like, that's really pushing people's comfortability.
Yes.
You know?
Now, are any trans men involved in this? They're thinking.
Well, I don't think any trans-identified men are involved with the Houston Troupe. A lot of us got involved and exposed to drag kings through the Austin Troupe, Kings and Things, and there were trans performers there, and just a lot of really great art coming out of what they were doing in Austin, and they've been together about 5 years, and they perform every year at the International Drag King Extravaganza, and so that's kind of how a lot of us got exposed, was that we actually got invited, or we submitted to perform there this past October.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just got exposed to drag king troupes in all their different
forms. And that
was
held in Austin, right?
Right.
And Katie was kind enough to provide us with a wonderful keynote from Leslie Feinberg.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Someone who does live between the binary.
Exactly.
Definitely. And everyone should read her books.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the performance coming up on Friday, there are going to be performers from out of town. And there are some trans folk.
Now, what is that performance on Friday?
It's called The Love Show. It's at 1415 California. Doors at 9, show at 10. And the Gendermen will be performing. But also, we're having performers from Austin, New Orleans, and San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said the group in Austin had been together 5 years, so how long has this troupe been together?
The performance in Austin was actually our first group performance. I mean, Katie and I have done a few things together, and I had the gracious fortune of doing a few things in Austin, but as far as Houston's first sort of organized group piece, that was it. And we did do San Quentin by Johnny Cash, and it was a piece about the death penalty.
Mm.
And so this will be our first big Houston sort of debut,
right.
We really want to encourage everyone to support
it. We've performed in Houston before, but this is our first show to produce,
which
is an awesome distinction, because we've had Austin come and produce shows in our city, and we've performed in them, but this time it's like our thing, and so we're really excited to see, you know, the turnout and to, you know, feel Houston's energy for this kind of performance.
It's a fairly new phenomenon in general, but certainly in Houston. Most of the women that are doing the
drag king or things around gender are a younger generation. So it would be maybe the last 10 years that this has really been growing, although there probably have been women. I know some of the early blues singers, Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith, were noted for wearing male attire and performing.
Mm-hmm. And it dates back, I mean, in a long time ago, even women's roles were frequently played by men and men's roles frequently played by women. But I think that this generation is starting to see something that, you know, we've reached, you know, an apex sort of point where we understand that if you think outside of normal sexual expression in this society, you're queer. Whether that means that you like someone of the same sex or you like kinky sex or whatever it takes for you, you're queer. And so if you identify that way and you're thinking out of those boxes, we invite you to just push and see what other boxes that you'd be tempted to think outside of, you know? And I think that's what it's all about. Like, this generation gets that. And, you know, we all have something to teach each other.
So there's women called the Gendermen, and that's G-E-N-D-E-R-M-Y-N, men with a Y, I love it. And they're seeking to break barriers regarding sexuality, gender, and community, and to bring people together, to bring the queer community into a larger social justice movement. So that's interesting that they're doing it with that intent. And you can see them on Friday the 23rd at Club 1415, which is at 1415 California. And this is their first show produced in Houston. So I wish you...
And it's 18 and up as well.
Oh, okay. You have to be at least 18 years old or older to attend. And I guess there's a small admittance fee or... Okay, yes, they say. So show up, and if they want to get in touch, maybe want to join the troop, who do they call? Or
you can go online and send us an email at Gendermen, G-E-N-D-E-R-M-Y-N, at gmail.com. And we also have a MySpace. It's / Bayou City Gendermen, you know, MySpace.com/.
Thank you for being on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Don't even think twice, just get up and go. Pull out the plug, I know.
This is JD. That's new music. The artist is named David Vector. That's the title track from his CD called Go.
This is Queer Voices.
And Jessica stayed with us long enough to give an announcement about a speaker tomorrow.
Thanks so much. At the University of Houston tomorrow, Tuesday, February 20th, the Women's Studies Department has brought Carl Bryant, who is a sociologist from University of California, Santa Barbara. He's currently completing a study of the psychiatric diagnosis gender identity disorder in children. He was himself a research subject for 15 years, beginning at age 5 in one of the most widely known studies of feminine boys. So in his work, he weaves a lot of his historical analysis with his own autobiographical experience. So he will be tomorrow speaking in the Women's Studies office at 624 Agnes Arnold from 11:30 to 12:30. It's a lunchtime talk, so bring your lunch. And then he'll stay, and then they're going to be screening on Wednesday night at 6:30 Ma Vie en Rose, which of course is a film about a young French boy who identifies as a girl.
A darling movie.
It's great. Yeah, it's going to be at 6:30 in Agnes Arnold, room 2, which is in the underground, on Wednesday night. And Carl Bryant, Professor Bryant, will be there to speak about that.
And this is open to the public.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be a student.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's free.
Okay, very good.
Thank you so much,
Jessica. And Jessica wanted to remind us that Nancy Ford will be emceeing their program on Friday.
Along with Anita Bump.
Anita Bump. Okay, I don't even want to know. And we do have a sad news, the passing of Barbara Giddings. She was 75 years old, and she was a gay rights activist since the late 1950s. She died after a lengthy fight with breast cancer. And she she's noted for helping to organize the New York City chapter of Daughters of Bilitis, which was an early lesbian rights organization. And she also met her life partner through that group, Kate Lawhanson. Ms. Giddings edited the group's publication, The Ladder, from 1963 to 1966, and worked with Lawhanson on her 1973 book, The Gay Crusaders. She became well known to the public in 1965 when she helped organize gay rights demonstrators at the White House and Independence Hall in 2005. They attended the unveiling of the state historic marker, noting those demonstrations across the street from Independence Hall in 2005, and she was the head of the American Library Association's Gay Task Force. In 2003, the association presented her with their highest honor, a lifetime membership. She was also active in the campaign that led the American Psychiatric Association's 1973 decision to drop homosexuality from its list of mental disorders. She lived with Lawhanson in Philadelphia and Wilmington, Delaware, in their later years, and they recently moved to an assisted living center where she fell into a coma and died. In addition to Lawhanson, Miss Giddings is survived by her sister, Eleanor Giddings Taylor. And Barbara Giddings, for anyone who's spent any time reading anthologies or history of the queer music movement, will definitely come across Barbara Giddings, and it's really her contributions are so vast, and I guess we just have to send her off with a thank you very much for being one of those crusaders and pioneers.
A few other calendar items coming up. Of course, we're going to be talking about the AIDS Walk, which is coming up on March 11th. But before that, Grand Marshal voting for this year's Grand Marshal for the parade is this Wednesday at Guava Lamp from 6:30 to 10:30. This was just announced. And then Saturday, the last time to vote is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Pride Office, 1415 California. And if you'd like more information, you can go to pridehouston.org. It's on the front page there. There's another parade coming up.
Yeah, but first let's say this is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. You're listening to Queer Voices.
And at 89.5 in Galveston.
I always forget about Galveston. I'm sorry. On March the 3rd, and I understand you're helping out with this. You have a little bit of history working on parades, Mr. Valinsky. March the 3rd at 10 a.m. on Washington Avenue, Super Neighborhood 22 is celebrating the rich history and diversity of Washington Avenue. The parade will be from Shepherd Drive to Westcott Street, and you can call 713-862-7465 or go to the website at wowtheparade.com. That's wowtheparade.com.
W-O-W stands for Washington on Washington.
Right. Aren't they clever?
Yes.
But it's really exciting, and I didn't realize so much of the history. And, of course, the area off of Washington Avenue between Shepherd and Westcott is pretty gay-friendly. There's a number of our...
It's changing a lot, too.
Well, yes, it is. But it's great that to have a chance to have, it kind of seems like one of those old-fashioned little things that, you know, a small town would do. And actually, Washington Avenue was kind of the main drag and was known as the Road West, because
right.
Before there was a Hempstead Highway, before there was a Katy Freeway, there, or Old Katy Road even, there was Washington Avenue. So they're going to have lots of things going on there, and you can... Go enjoy yourself.
There's also a food and clothing drive this Saturday at 1318 Westheimer, and that's the Bartini parking lot. And this, you know, if you drop off some old clothes or food, it certainly could be used. And this is for trans individuals. So, while that's going on, and if you'd like to get your information on the air here, you can email us, jack@queervoices.org, or that's probably the best way to do it. You can also mail it into 419 Lovett Boulevard, 77006. We have the AIDS Walk coming up again this year, and Mark Cohen's with us. And tell us a little bit about what the AIDS Walk is all about, like we don't know.
Like you don't know, Jack. This is, matter of fact, our 18th year to do a walk here in Houston to make awareness of the fact that individuals are still infected and individuals are still in need. So it raises, first of all, dollars, not only for the AIDS Foundation, but for 19 other partnering agencies, as well as the awareness that a pandemic that has touched quite a few of us is still out there, and it needs the attention of the community. You know, it's sad to say that there are 3 individuals who become infected with HIV every day here in Houston alone.
Wow.
Which is staggering if you think of that.
Well, and we all worked very hard to educate everybody, and that just didn't quite, you know, it just didn't quite work out.
There's always room for education, and that is one of the things that we focus in on at AIDS Foundation Houston, and the walk is just another way to bring the community together. Individuals from all walks of life, all diversities, to come together and send a message that HIV is still important. There are still folks being infected daily, and that level of compassion that we had back, you know, 25, 26 years ago when we put a label on this virus is still needed today.
Well, what's really nice about the walk website is that, you know, if you don't want to walk, you can pledge to somebody else.
Absolutely.
And it just makes it so much easier to do that. You can pick a team, and it's listed by company or just organization name, or they just come up with the name, or you can pick an individual. And the search is very easy.
We have a very easy website, and it's www.AIDSWalkHouston.org, and it's very user-friendly. I know how to turn my laptop on, and that's about it. And I was able to set up my site. And it just is a great tool for individuals to make themselves a website, make themselves a walk team, get some of their friends together, set up a walk team, and start making pledges and gathering money to help support what we do at AIDS Foundation.
And what's the age variance of people who show up to walk?
Anyone who can walk. You know, we have from toddlers up to individuals who are older than both of us combined, I think. So there's no age limit. It's a great day to come out to Sam Houston Park on March the 11th and join your fellow Houstonians in our community to reinforce that HIV has not gone away in this community. It has not gone away within the country. And the pandemic is still there.
Well, it's interesting to see how the walk has grown from the real difficulty of getting the word out. And now you have some major sponsors that help bring out the people and the word.
We have, we're very fortunate this year, matter of fact, that Chevron is our main sponsor for the walk. And our goal this year is to have roughly 15,000 Houstonians jammed into Sam Houston Park and head down Allen Parkway for the walk. It's a very short walk. It's only about 3.1 miles. We'll have some entertaining, going on some entertainment in the park beforehand and afterwards, as well as the other agencies that benefit from the walk will have tables so that individuals will be able to gather and find out exactly what those agencies do as well as what we do at AFH.
So this is really neat that you have all these other agencies that are together on here and get some of the proceeds from the
Correct.
Walk. So it's really very much a community event.
Very much, and that is one of the things that we have always focused at is a collaborative effort. We provide services to about 5,000 to 6,000 folks annually at AFH. And
what are those, you know, briefly, what are some of those services?
Some of our competencies that I know you're familiar with Stone Soup, which is our nutritionally sound pantry, which our clients can use. We have rental and financial assistance. We have programs that we go actually into the correctional facilities and do peer education. We run summer camps for children who are HIV positive. So those are some of the things that we do. We're very proud of what we do because of the community itself.
Right. When the AIDS Foundation started many years ago, pretty much when somebody came down becoming HIV positive or full-blown AIDS, they didn't usually have much of a lifespan after that.
That was it.
And now things are changing that people are living longer, which means they need the services longer.
They need services, and one of the other things that we do, because people are living longer, the antiretroviral therapies are just expanding lifespans that we thought were going to be shortened. We do a lot of back-to-work. We're looking at programs where we can take individuals who felt that they were at the end of their life and hopefully provide them some tools or some refresher courses to make them independent and productive individuals of our community.
Tell us a little bit about your role at the AIDS Foundation, Houston.
My role, I am the program manager, and I focus in on our camp programs, and those are summer camps that we do for children as well as families living with HIV and AIDS, not only here in Texas, but we have several programs that we do internationally in collaborative effort with Baylor College of Medicine, both in parts of Africa, Malawi and Botswana, as well as in Romania. In addition to that, kind of speaking to the fact that folks are living longer, we're very excited that last year we were able to start a teen leadership program, recognizing that children who were originally infected with HIV are growing up. And hopefully,
and having to deal with their sexuality and sex.
Having to deal with their sexuality, their sex, having to deal with the fact that They're starting to date. They want to do it in a healthy manner. They have an illness that, needless to say, is sexually transmitted. It's one of the modes of transmission. And how to help provide them the skills and the tools to transition positively into adulthood.
Wow. Yeah. So, let's get back to the who, what, when, where, why.
Who, what, when, and
yes,
where.
Yes, the annual AIDS walk. And this is what number?
This is number 18 for us.
Great. Yeah. And you know, I know you have some great staff over there. Kelly McCann, who's the executive director.
Kelly is our CEO, and she's a neat, neat lady.
And she's been on the show before. She's a part of our community. If you want to get involved, you want to either just donate, or you want to donate and walk, or you just want to walk,
there's a couple of different ways to do it. You can visit our website at www.AIDSWalkHouston.org, or you can call kind of our walk gurus over at the agency. You can contact them on phone at 713-403-WALK. And the good thing about our walk is to participate. We love for you to be able to raise some money, but that's not mandatory. It's the simple fact that you come out and you show your support speaks volumes of what we do within our community, both the GLBT community and the community at large. It's a great day. It's going to start. We're going to check in. Registration starts at 8 with our opening ceremonies at 9, and we'll kind of hit the streets at 10 o'clock on March the 11th. The other thing to kind of make everyone aware of, that is the same weekend that daylight savings kicks in. So when you leave the bars or wherever, or if you're listening to you guys late at night on that night, make sure to set your watches accordingly so that you are on time for the walk.
So that means you lose an hour.
Correct.
Yes, and that's the new, and this is the first time they're doing that. They've extended daylight savings time, which, of course, we all love, the confusion of all of that. So that's on Sunday, March 11th.
Correct.
The first day of daylight savings time is the 18th annual AIDS Walk, and Mark Cohen was here from the AIDS Foundation Houston, and if you want some more information, it is AIDSWalkHouston.org.
Correct, Jack.
Great. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Hi, this is Georgina Beyer. I'm an MP in the New Zealand Parliament, the world's first transsexual to have been elected to such a position. You're listening to This Way Out. Stay out and proud.
Now the church bells are ringing, the members wear their best. In the pews they are waiting for their holy guest.
Robinson may have hoped that the election of Katharine Jefferts Schori would take him out of the spotlight, but it didn't work out that way. When the Episcopal Church USA made Jefferts Schori its first female presiding bishop, her gender and her staunch support of openly gay Bishop of New Hampshire Robinson did nothing to cool the rage of conservative Anglicans threatening schism. Jefferts Schori is in the hot seat this week at a World Conference of Anglican Bishops in Tanzania, where conservatives have refused to take communion with her and are demanding that both she and the U.S. Church be disciplined for elevating Robinson. The meeting may go down as the most fractious in modern Anglican history. Meanwhile, Bishop Robinson has been occupying a different kind of hot seat as one of the stars of For the Bible Tells Me So, a documentary about LGBT families and the impact impact of religion, he was among the most popular celebrities at this year's Sundance Film Festival. When you sit down and talk with him face-to-face, as this Way Out correspondent Vivian Marie did, it's hard to figure out why this warm, loving man scares the vestments off his Anglican peers.
Some of my opponents have referred to me as the most dangerous man in the Anglican Communion. And when pressed about that, one of them told me that the reason that I'm so dangerous is that I'm so normal. I think that often critics of gay and lesbian people point to perhaps the most extreme among our community and sort of write us off in that way. And yet, in many ways, I'm very traditional, very, I wouldn't say conservative, but certainly traditional and not outlandish. My life has been quite in the mainstream. Certainly my faith is in the mainstream, and I think that's why they find me so dangerous.
At the last convention, something miraculous happened. You may not have been the center of attention, but you did get some. But they elected a woman to be presiding bishop.
Oh, it was so great, so exciting. I was so thrilled to be a part of it. As a matter of fact, you know, I told her about, oh, maybe it was 15 minutes after she was elected, I said, Catherine, I have a confession to make. You're my presiding bishop now, and I want to make my confession. I voted for you to get myself off the front page, so you'd be on the front page. She just laughed. She is a wonderful human being and bishop. She will be a great presiding bishop. And it was a miracle. And, you know, and in the church where we were meeting for that election, around the three walls of the church was this long and beautifully done timeline of the involvement of women in the life of the church. And about 3 minutes after the election, one of the male bishops grabbed a magic marker and went over to the wall and wrote in what we had done at that very moment.
Is this really important to us as gay folks who are not religious or who aren't Episcopalians? How does this impact our lives?
You know, I think God is doing a new thing in the world. The bishop under which I graduated from seminary said that mission, he defined mission as being figuring out where God is already at work in the world and joining God there. Now, not everyone would agree with me, but I think God is doing this new thing in the world with respect to GLBT folks. God all along has believed that we were God's children. We have never not been loved by God. But religious institutions have not understood that and have taken some things out of context in the Bible to use against us, and combined with their own prejudices and so on, have really treated us so badly. But God has always wanted the best for us, and God has always wanted us to know that we were acceptable in God's eyes. And so I think God is working in the culture and in the church to bring us to full inclusion in both places. And while I don't need anyone necessarily to believe that God is behind it, I do. And God is doing the same thing that God did in Jesus' time with lepers and tax collectors and prostitutes and women. I mean, women were way less than second class, and yet Jesus was this sort of radically hospitable person who treated them like human beings, like the children of God they were. And so if Jesus were alive today, he'd be right in the middle of the GLBT community, and he'd be with the 50 million people around the world who have HIV/AIDS, and he would be with the poor, and he would be working for immigrant rights, and he would be doing all of those things that he did in his own day, which were to go to the people who had been pushed to the margins and told they were unworthy, and saying to them, you are loved by God beyond your wildest imagining. So my election and consecration says to people, how could this be happening in the church? How could God be letting this happen if it if it weren't of God. And you know, my hope is that they will own that for themselves, because the thing that is reported to have happened at Jesus' baptism is that as he came up out of the waters of the River Jordan, there was this voice that said, "This is my son, my beloved, in whom I am well pleased." I think that's what God says to gay and lesbian people everywhere, to his bisexual and transgendered children, that you are my beloved, in you I am well pleased. And I'm gonna preach that good news till the day I die. You know, I think one of the important things about my election and consecration is that now there is a voice at that particular table that has not been there before. Someone who is openly gay and not only self-affirming, but believing that God affirms me in my own sexuality. And so the church is, just as it has included women and other voices in the past, it is now including gay and lesbian voices. And I just happen to be the first in that, but I am privileged and honored to be at the table. And at the end of time, when there's this heavenly banquet, everybody's going to be there, all the voices. And you know, over time, what the church has tried to do is to approximate that heavenly banquet. And we don't always get it right. And it sometimes takes us a long time. I mean, you know, we use the Bible to affirm slavery, but we finally saw the light and we began to see people of color the way God sees them. And I just think that's happening with others as well as the GLBT community.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine.
Now I always see him down there. He'll always draw me near. When I ask him why he stays, he says there's too much.
Vivian Marie. Let's get back to our interview with Gene Robinson, openly gay bishop of the Episcopal Church. You know, you have a history of working with conflict resolution, and I have learned a little bit about that. And I've learned that if both parties are not willing to be honest, then there can be no resolution.
Perhaps the way I would come at that a little bit differently would be to say that my responsibility is to be as honest and open and true as I can be, and then the other side gets to choose what they're going to do with that. And even if they're not as willing to be as forthcoming, it doesn't relieve me of the responsibility of being as true and trustworthy as I can be. So I try to worry about what I'm saying, what I'm doing, what I'm espousing, and not trying to be so reactive to the other side.
And when it's stated that you are the first openly gay bishop, is that implying that there are other gay bishops?
Well, there have always been gay bishops, and that's why the openly gay part is appropriate. I mean, you know, it's only been in recent times that it's even been remotely safe for any of us to come out, and certainly in the church, that is complicated by our long history of condemnation of gay and lesbian people. And so, yes, there are other bishops who have, for whatever reason, not chosen to be honest about this particular aspect of their lives. And I think that's incredibly sad. And I know the joy and freedom that comes from being able to be who you truly and honestly are. And, you know, I would wish that for them. But that's a personal decision that everyone has to make.
I know I came out and then I told my family and then I was in a relationship in another country in South America, and I had to go back in the closet, and that was stifling for me.
Absolutely. The closet is a very apt image because it's confining, it's dark, as you say, it's stifling. The air is not fresh and clean, and it's a wonderful image of what it's like to to not be able to be who God created you to be. And so I, you know, I really hope that for every gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgendered person, that they somehow find the courage and the support, because it's, you can't do this alone, but find the support to come out and live life honestly. And while there will always be prices to be paid for that, ultimately, altogether, they don't stack up to the reward of integrity. I think the experience of anyone who has been pushed to the margins and to the sides of society, to the sides of the church, is an opportunity to know God, because that's where God encounters all of us when we're really up against it in whatever way. And when, you know, when everything's going well, we hardly give God a second thought. Maybe from time to time we'll say thank you, but, you know, we don't keep ourselves mindful of God during those times. But when some terrible thing has happened, or we're facing some potentially tragic event, then we really are in touch with how needful we are of God and God's love and support. And so, people early on would say to me, was this all worth it? You're coming out and all that you're putting up with. And even in the last 3 years, people saying, you know, oh, gosh, it must have been awful. You know, while there have been really hard times and I've endured death threats and had to wear a bulletproof vest at my own consecration, mostly it's been a blessing. I have just felt so incredibly thankful and appreciative for this experience of being an exile and knowing my need of God, and then having God come through for me in such real ways. How could I ever regret such a thing?
What about people who say that the church has hurt them?
Well, I believe them. The church hurt me. And the church has wounded its gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgendered children horribly. I think there's just simply no question about that. The question is, so what are we going to do in the future? What are we going to do with kids who are growing up right now? Can we give them a church and a culture which does not hurt them in the ways that many of us were hurt in our own growing up? And that's what my life and work is committed to. I think people forget that just because the church deals with God doesn't make the church perfect like God is perfect. It's a human institution. It does the best it can with what it can figure out about God. God's love is there, but our comprehension of it and our understanding of how broad and deep and wide it is imperfect. And rather than seeing people in the church as hypocritical, I just see them as human. But at least they're in a place where they are striving for the kinds of selfless and loving values that I believe God is all about. And so the community of the church gives me a place to be with people who are similarly looking to live their lives in that way. And of course they don't get it right all the time, and I don't get it right all the time, and yet I need the community of people to help me hold on to those values. Perhaps I should mention my website. If anyone is interested in sermons that I've preached or talks that I've made or things that I put out to the diocese, you can certainly go to our website, which is www.nhepiscopal.org.
Bishop Dean Robinson, thank you very much for being here with us.
Vivian, it was wonderful to be with you. Thanks so much.
I'm Vivian Marie.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Don Lupo, Rex Wagner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Vivian Marie contributed program material. Thanks also to Curtis Crick and Rita Gonzalez. Jalen Ricks and Marcia Stevens performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some very special CD thank you gifts, too. We literally can't go on without you. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on CFUV, Victoria, British Columbia, KPFT, Houston, Texas, WSMU, North Dartmouth, Massachusetts, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Gonna run to you this time. Carry me along. I won't ask this time. Love's not right or wrong. It's just the way I come to feel with your head upon my shoulder. Gonna run to you.
That little song was by a brand new group called Nine Bob Note, and they kind of spell it that way, the number nine, Bob Note. The disc was called Mad at Superman.
This is Queer Voices.
Yes, we love being queer here on Queer Voices, don't we, J.D.?
You can't help it.
J.D. Doyle and Deborah Bell, we're here in the studio with Carol Wyatt. She's the president of the board of Pride Houston, and she's going to share with us what's in store for this year. There's been a lot of talk because there were things going on, a study about possible changes in the Pride for future years, but that's not until 2019. 2008, and kind of it got kind of lost what was really going to be happening for 2007. So this is your chance, Carol, to bring us up to date.
This is it, huh?
Yeah. What is the theme this year?
Oh, man, you totally screwed me up. Oh, man.
Would you like to ask the questions and then answer them?
That might make it easier. I think it's something to do with Texas. It's a Texas-oriented theme, but I am drawing a total blank. I have all sorts of other stuff written down, but I forgot to write that down.
Maybe we should ask her, Carol, what other stuff do you have written down?
Carol, what would you like to talk to us about that you've actually written down?
Okay.
So for those of you scoring for home, that's Deborah 1, Carol nothing at this point.
And Carol is wearing her Astros shirt.
Pitchers and catchers reported last week. I'm ready for the season.
She's ready, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's give it another try.
You know what? I would love to tell you about the continuation of grand marshal voting. Is that perhaps
that
a topic
for
you? That
is a great idea.
And I have it written down, so I'm pretty well prepared to talk about it, too. We have two more opportunities for everybody to get out and vote. On Wednesday, February 21st, we will be at Guava Lamp from 6:30 to 10 p.m. On Saturday, the 24th, that's the final day of voting, we'll be at the Pride office from 10 to 4. Please bring a picture ID, government issued, with you. We just want to verify that you live in Harris or one of the contiguous surrounding counties.
See, I think people should bring their voter ID card. For their voter registration. Just a theory I have, but and the voting for the grand marshals, who's nominated?
Well, I am prepared to talk about that,
I'm
happy to tell you. Although I did smear it before I came in, so we'll see if we can get through it. All right, the female grand marshals are Maria Gonzalez, Judy Reeves, and Barbara Walker. The male nominees, Christopher Garrett, Jack Valinsky, Fred Walters. The organizations, Houston Black Tie Dinner, ICOH, the Space City Empire, and the Loaf Group, which is Lesbians Over 50. The honorary nominee is Garnett Coleman. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say I think Garnett has this in the bag.
I suspect as much myself.
Right.
And totally someone who deserves that honor of being the honorary grand marshal. So Wobble Lamp on Wednesday. People can go by and have a lovely beverage and vote.
Yes.
And then on Saturday at the Pride office, which is located where?
1415 California.
Which is downstairs from where the club 1415
right.
is.
Right. So
the
doors over on the side. If you're standing in the street, first of all, don't get hit. But if you're standing in the street facing the building, there's an alleyway that runs up the left-hand side of the building. Come up that alleyway, and we're just a short ways down.
Yeah, the main door is there.
Are you going to describe the qualifications of any of these people? Or figure if you don't know who they are, what business you got voting for?
Now, it should be on the website. That's easier than her having to...
Yeah, you know, I have to fall on my sword here a little bit. We've had a number of personnel-related challenges this spring, and we do not have the biographies posted on the website. The names are all listed there, but hopefully if you're voting for somebody, you know who they are and what they've done for the community, right? So that's one program I wanted to tell you about. I also want to tell you about our upcoming next Pride in Action event, which
is next Tuesday.
It's probably been some time since you and I have talked about the Pride in Action program, but that is a fairly new program for our organization. We send out groups of Pride volunteers clad in very attractive but distinctive Pride T-shirts to participate in a variety of volunteering opportunities all across the city. And the idea is we want to let the broader city of Houston know that their GLBT neighbors are good citizens of the community and are willing to lend a hand along with everybody else. So we served meals at Thanksgiving and Christmas. We sorted toys during the holidays. We planted trees on Arbor Day, and that was really cold and wet. But we were there. And next week, we are sorting food at the Houston Food Bank. So if you are interested in participating in that, it's Tuesday, February 27th from 5:30 to 8:30. You can find information about that on our website. The food bank is at 3811 Highway 59 North. And we'll bring a bunch of extra T-shirts with us. So if you haven't participated in a Pride in Action event yet, we'll get you appropriately clad once you get there.
And so are the people involved in Pride in Action people that are already volunteers for Pride?
You know, you can do spot volunteer duty. If you have no affiliation to Pride, if you have no interest in being a part of what we do at Pride, but like the idea of Pride in Action, then come participate in any of those events that float your boat. It's a very fluid program, and we'd like to see broader participation mm-hmm. from the community. Up to this point, it's been mostly people who are already oriented, already a part of the Pride family.
Uh-huh. But so many of us do already take part and work hard in many organizations within our mm-hmm. own community. Certainly people are involved in things both within the queer community and without, but this is a way to be visible as a GLBT person.
And here's my favorite little vignette. I've knocked things over. Things just continue to go well for me here in the booth. Yes.
The haunted control booth.
Right. So we were sorting toys at Bel Air Methodist Church right before Christmas, and one of our women was working alongside. When we go out to these events, we don't all stay in a clump. We spread out. We like to walk in together because it makes a statement, but then we spread out and work amongst other people.
No gaggles of gaze.
No gaggles of gaze. We only gaggle at the beginning. So she was working alongside an older gentleman who I think was a member of the church there, and they were working along companionably, and all of a sudden he saw the back of her T-shirt, which says the GLBT community cares, and he said, I don't know what GLBT means. And she explained it to him, and he stepped back for a minute, thought about it, and he got a smile on his face, and he said, you know what, I am so happy to know you, and I'm happy that you're here. Y'all are welcome back anytime. You know, maybe we opened up a mind a little bit
good
that
neighbors.
Night. Yeah. And that's really what it's all about. So please feel free to join us for any of the events that might excite you. We're going to be handing out water at the AIDS Walk, for example, and that's our March event.
March 11th.
Yeah. And I don't have the info on the April event yet, but stay tuned.
So you do something once a month.
Yeah,
that
about
says Pride
that.
In Action.
Yeah.
And so what kinds of things do people do when they're not doing that that help Pride?
Well, we have 11 standing committees that are working fast and furious to prepare for all of our upcoming festivities. In fact, I just came from a series of meetings this evening. So you can choose to volunteer with Pride in a couple of different ways. If you're interested in a longer-term engagement, being a part of a committee that's working year-round, we've got spots for you. But if you're just interested in dropping by and helping out on Parade Day, certainly we need tons of volunteers on Parade Day. We'll ask you to sign up in advance and come to an orientation. It's very organized. But come Parade Day, we'll be up to over 200 volunteers. And we need lots of people. Mm-hmm. So.
And so when is the parade?
I know the answer to that one.
All right.
Saturday,
I thought I was going to get her with that.
You started off getting me. Saturday, June 23rd, the festival goes from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. The parade starts promptly at 8:45. And for those of you who say the parade never starts on time, it does start
on
time.
Always. At least in the past, it always started on time.
But it starts at the corner of Mandel and Westheimer, and as of yet, we have not managed to break the space-time continuum and get the parade to you, Woodhead and Westheimer, yeah.
Yes.
So we haven't managed to figure out how to defy time and get it to you.
Well, you can stand down there and watch it down there.
There you go. You could.
If you really want to see the very beginning.
Yeah. Can I tell you about another exciting, actually it was the meeting I was just at.
Well, please do.
We have a new event this year called Pride Idol, and it is a live talent competition modeled along the lines of American Idol.
Which I have never watched.
Yeah, me either, but a lot of people like it. So that will be kicking off in April. We'll have two rounds of competition that will occur over at Guava Lamp, and I think this is pretty cool. The finals will be held on the main stage at the festival, and I'm not at liberty to release the name yet, but the performer who will be heading up that competition that day is a former Pride Idol contestant who's from Houston that is a name...
American Idol contestant.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, American
Keeping
Idol.
Keeping me honest.
Not non-winner.
Non-winner, yes.
But finalist from before.
Yeah, with a finalist.
Semi-finalist. Something. People will know the name. Yeah. I've been told people will know.
There'll be screening competitions, though, ahead of time, and so the main event that day won't be like karaoke night.
Oh, no, and it's not karaoke anyway. It is live singing. So there are...
That leaves me out.
Yeah. They've asked me not to participate as well, oddly enough. So there will be five entry-level events. The winners from those events go to a semifinal round, and the winners from that semifinal round, the three finalists will appear on the...
Okay, now when do those start?
That starts in mid-April, so keep watching the website.
Where?
Oh, you know what?
Yeah. Are you going to have J.D. Doyle be the judge?
I
think he should play the Simon role.
We're looking
for
judge,
that.
So that could happen. But actually, we have... This is new technology for me. We have a MySpace page set up with information about that. So it's myspace.com/Houston Pride Idol. So you can go there today and get information about that.
And who will be the judges for that?
Not finalized yet.
We're
working on it.
Well,
yeah. Working on it. And that will be sponsored by one of our new sponsors, Sky Vodka. So I wanted to give a shout out to them.
This is non-commercial radio.
Yeah.
And, okay, so that you have all these events going on. I know that you had, like you mentioned earlier, that there were some personnel problems with, and so that has been solved.
I bring you such happy news. It's happy news for me.
Especially because you've been kind of filling in.
Well, we've all been wearing a couple of hats, let's put it that way. So we have.
That's why your head looks so big.
Well, it's been swelling from all the compliments I've been getting from the community lately. Okay, maybe not so much. We have two paid positions, the Director of Operations and the Director of Development. Director of Operations manages those 11 standing committees to not only run our office year-round, but to produce the festival, the parade, and all the ancillary events that go on as well. And then the Director of Development is our fundraising professional. So I'm very pleased to announce that Mary Urban has accepted the role of Director of Operations. She comes to us with a rich body of professional experience from the Orange Show Art Car Parade, the Memorial Park Conservancy, and the Bayou City Arts Festival. She's worked contract engagements for all of those. So she's got great big event experience, and her references tell me she really does a great job of creating a great environment for volunteers to have fun and to be productive, and that's very important for us. For the Director of Development, we have a woman named Marion LaSalle, who's just a classic entrepreneur, and her references tell me that she doesn't let anything stand in the way of the goals that she has set, and the favorite quote I heard about her is, Marion finds a way to ask you for things in a way that makes it easy for you to say yes.
Ooh.
So we should
learn that technique, Carol.
I apparently am just using the bludgeoning technique. So.
Well, you have to get their attention somewhat.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. So those were the key things that I wanted to tell your audience tonight.
Can you talk about talent yet for the festival, or is that too soon?
Yeah, too soon.
Okay.
The festival guys want to make a big splash of an announcement.
Is the American Idol person GLBT?
I don't think so, but Houston native and known in the Idol world. So, you know, we're...
Are you still taking suggestions for people to perform and things to go on?
We've locked in our national entertainment for the main stage, but there may still be opportunities for local performers on the community stage. So check the website PrideHouston.org under the festival, and I believe there's information about how to apply for entertainment there.
And will you you said the festival. What's in store for the festival this year besides the entertainment? Are there any changes?
Yeah, we got a good new thing, and if this were commercial radio, I would tell you that Walgreens is the sponsor, but since this is not commercial radio, I won't mention their name, but they are going to fund an air-conditioned health screening tent for us this year. And we're working in conjunction with the Lesbian Health Initiative and with Legacy Clinic to actually conduct the screenings that go on inside. And
interesting, that's something I proposed many years ago, that everybody get together and do a thing like that.
Well, it took us a while, but we got around to it.
If people would just listen to me.
And, you know, I got to tell you, we debated a little bit about it because we thought, well, it's a day of fun. Do people really want to deal with health issues? But the reason that we decided to do it is we know we draw an awful lot of people from outside the Houston community where they may not have the same access to confidential health services that they do here. And we thought it was a good thing to offer the community.
And you have the community organizations tent.
Right.
So that people can learn about some of the many organizations and maybe something that they weren't aware of before, they can either get involved or they can use the services of, etc.
Yeah, this is really, I would think, the best and most unique opportunity for all community organizations every year to present their best face to the community, to tell what you're all about, what you might need in terms of financial support or volunteer support.
Last year there was a history tent, and I really liked that. Are we going to do that again?
We absolutely are, and that was sponsored by the John Stephen Kellett Foundation. And
I thought it was marvelous.
Our good friend John Kellett.
Yeah, and we're hopeful that his foundation won't vote on that until March, but we're hopeful that he's going to return to sponsor that again as well. And we got just a ton of great compliments on that and good coverage in the Chronicle about it as well. You know, Pride's mission is to commemorate, to celebrate, and to educate about Pride, and that history tent really does give us a great opportunity to fulfill the education part of our mission statement.
And how, if a group is interested in being part of the festival, how do they do that?
Again, check the festival, check our website, and go to the festival page, and there are instructions for how you can participate, what the process is, etc.
And if you want to have a delegation in the parade, what do you need to do? Go to the website.
There actually is a forms page on the website that has application forms for both the festival and the parade, and it spells out the rules. It spells out the requirements and the fees associated with it. I want to talk a little bit about, do we have a minute or two?
Sure.
Okay. One of the questions that we asked on our survey about moving had to do with the issue of, it's an issue that we face of, we get complaints that the parade is boring, that we need to make it a little bit more exciting, but we also have heard very clearly through the community, from the community via the survey, that they don't want anybody excluded, that if you're a nonprofit and you want to be in that parade, you ought to be able to be in the parade, right? So we're trying to balance those two needs, and I think we've come up with some good ways to do that this year. For example, we are putting some volunteer choreographers and designers on our staff. And so if you are a nonprofit and would like help in thinking about the way to present yourself as creatively as possible, you call us up and we'll put you in touch with one of those guys. We're not going to come build the float for you, but we can give you some ideas about whatever your budget is. We can help you use it creatively.
And there's been a how to do a float workshop in the past.
Yeah, you know, but it was always too late. I mean, it just really wasn't timely enough to help people plan in the early stages. And so we're going to do a couple of those earlier this year, probably in conjunction with Party Boy. They've got lots of different tchotchkes that you can decorate a float with.
Mm-hmm. The guy with the Loaf Kazoo Band.
Hey, there's an idea.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, frankly, even if we can just get everybody in matching T-shirts, put some glow-in-the-dark bracelets on their wrist, and give them a little hand routine, we've already increased their production values, right? So we just want everybody to be able to...
She's so kind.
Do as much as they can with whatever their budget is.
Well, you know, sometimes it's like, I think, a pea flag, and how they always get the biggest amount of applause from the crowd. And pretty much it's just the people
just
walking along.
Are.
But it's the fact that they're there and they're there for us is, you know, says a lot. And there's other groups, the transgender community, which doesn't have a large group in the parade. Of course, I don't want to walk all that far in high heels. I don't even want to wear high heels. But, you know, the legacy of Stonewall is that there were drag queens that were involved. And, of course, the community is about a lot more than demonstrations and riots. There were organizations that, like the Daughters of Philitis that I brought up when I was talking about Barbara Giddings, and the Manishing Society that already existed back in the 50s, even before Stonewall happened. Mm-hmm. Certainly that was a catalyst. That was when we fought back and said, we're not going to take this crap anymore. And it was kind of a breakthrough. So that's why traditionally in June, at the time of the Stonewall riots that took place in New York City, that hot June night. I think I read somewhere there was a full moon. I don't know. But I recommend everyone read David Carter's book, Stonewall, if they
book.
Want to know the true account of the events that took place that June night, and why it's so important to our community that we take part now in celebrating our pride, and also celebrating our community, because our community is... So it's diverse, but it's made up of people that are the people that do things. And sometimes they do them quietly behind the scenes, and you don't get to see them any other time than at the Pride Parade. But there's other events along. I mean, the parade's the finale, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole month that takes place. So what do you have anything on events that are going to be?
Yeah, I can give you a couple of prelims. On April 30th, we'll be announcing the Grand Marshals, the voting that's going on now. We won't make that public
until... Oh, we won't even know until April 30th?
I know. Well, you know, here's the reason why we have to do the voting so early. We participate in a national magazine that has extremely early deadlines.
Okay,
and so that's the only reason why we have to do the voting so early. Yeah. And then we don't want to announce it too early, because then it just sits there, right? So April 30th, we're going to have a big party at Cafe Adobe. And I don't know any more details yet, but hopefully some live entertainment. And we'll make that a big fun party. Then, of course, as we move into June, well, the Pride Idol will start in April, and that will be going on many, many days in April. In June, we will do a kickoff party. And last year, we did that at poolside at the Royalton Condos on Allen Parkway. And that was very well received. And we're hoping to do that there again. It was a lovely venue. People had a good time. And then, of course, our Friends of Pride program does its signature thank you event, the wine tasting event, the week before the parade and festival. Still looking for a venue for that one. We always look for something that's visually interesting, maybe a little bit off the beaten track, and we haven't quite found it yet.
Yeah, and there are other events that organizations will put on, and those will be at pridehouston.org. Thank you, Carol Wyatt from Pride Houston, for being with us on Queer Voices. Also, thanks to Mark Cohen from AIDS Foundation Houston. The AIDS Walk is on March 11th this year. Paul Scott from Equality Texas, and about Lobby Day on March the 5th. Next week, we have J.D. Doyle.
Queer Music Heritage. The second half will be on Bear Music, music by and for the bear community.
I am so interested in finding out what that is. And we'll also have Greg Chapman talking with Rob Scandardo of the Mankind Project. So join us then.
We need to thank Katie Hyman, the Drag King people.
Forgot
also.
The
they were really
drag
good.
Kings. Go see them Friday at 1415 California. And Greg Chapman will be on next week, and J.D. Doyle with Queer Music Heritage. Thank you all for listening to Queer Voices, and tune in next Monday night.
You've been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Join the celebration as the Men and Women of Heart Gala honors 10 outstanding citizens of Houston's Greater Bay Area on Saturday, February 24th at South Shore Harbor Hotel. This event benefits Bay Area Turning Point, a united affiliate that provides shelter and crisis intervention to victims of domestic and sexual violence and homelessness. For tickets, call 713-289-3654 or 281-488-4640. For the gala honoring the 10 most outstanding citizens of Houston's Greater Bay Area, this is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
We've all played that game. What's the CD that you'd take to a desert island if you had only one choice?
Maybe it would be something by...
Get up, get on up. Get...
Or maybe it would be a disc from...
Well, let's play it now, but with a twist.
What radio station would you take to a desert island if you had only one choice?
There's only one answer to that question.
It's KPFT, of course.
We bring you great music, news, and information each day. You depend on us to keep you up to date.
And radio that's worth listening to is radio that's worth supporting. Over 90% of our funding comes from people just like you.
Without you, KPFT would be gone. So visit our website today, kpft.org.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.